Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode we have here of Suspense Radio One-on-One. I am your host, John Robb. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Of course, this is in partners with PartnersInCrimeTours.net, and you can check them out to see all the exciting authors that they got coming up on all the tours. And we are going to be talking with Scott Miller today about his book, Counterfeit. He is going to be the next on Suspense Radio One-on-One. And all that starts right now.
Gonna like it. I think you're gonna feel you belong.
Everybody here again to the show. We want to thank you all, however, whenever, and wherever you listen to us. I will say that I'm a little on the downside right now. I had a tooth pulled on Friday afternoon. I hate that more than anything else. I'm just not a fan of dentists. I don't understand the whole process. And, that's just one thing I'm not a fan of. But we want to welcome here to the show Scott Miller. Like I said, he is the author of Counterfeit, his latest book. And, Scott, thank you so much for coming on. How you doing?
John, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. And I feel bad for you about the dentist. My dentist never hurt me for 40 years, and he just retired. So I'm kind of dreading meeting the new guy in a couple months. But
yeah,
thanks again
you,
for having.
Yeah, I think getting the tooth pulled. You know what? It's almost about as bad as, you know, just reading like a really bad book. And so I don't know which is worse, but the great thing is what we have here is your book, Counterfeit, has been released, and we kind of talked a little off the air. You got some things going on. It's the second book in the series. You now have a publisher. They're kind of doing some re-release things. So tell us about Counterfeit. Let us know what's going on about it.
I'll be happy to, John. Counterfeit was published in 2013 toward the end by Blank Slate Press, a traditional publisher. It's the second in my Mitchell Adams series. Mitchell Adams, the protagonist, is a social worker in private practice in St. Louis, present day. I myself am a clinical social worker with many years of experience in the field of psychiatry and later in just regular general medicine. But Mitch, in Counterfeit, receives a call from a detective, Detective Baker, who a year ago tried to arrest him for murder. The premise for Counterfeit, I was laying around at night talking with some friends, kind of wondering what would be the perfect crime. And I settled on what would happen if a man with the talent, brains, and resources, maybe who worked in a printing press, was able to get his hands on the color-shifting ink and the true government rag paper that the Treasury Department uses to make $100 bills. If this man with the talent got that equipment and was able to produce perfect duplicates of $100 bills, would there even be a crime? Because obviously when counterfeits are found, the person having them is frauded out of the money. But these bills are perfect copies of $100 bills. So they pass detection, they pass muster, banks take them. I've got kind of an ethical question here. Is this even a crime? So that's kind of how the idea for Counterfeit began. But back to Mitchell. gets a call in the middle of the night from a detective, like I said, who tried to arrest him for murder the year before. And Baker is asking Mitch to see a suicidal man just arrested for counterfeiting and for also shooting a pregnant security guard during a robbery at the Treasury Department. As the book gets delved into, you find out that nobody is really who they appear to be on the surface. Not Lonnie the counterfeiter, not the prosecuting attorney who is a golden boy, son of a former U.S. president, who also happens to have his own Secret Service detail. And interestingly enough, in my research for this, the Secret Service was actually begun the day Lincoln was assassinated. And their sole job was to protect money and arrest and actually hang counterfeiters. That was their sole job when they were conceived way back then. And only later did they also take on the task of protecting the president and key government officials. So Lonnie's not the amoral criminal that he appears to be, the prosecuting attorney, this golden boy. You find out he is not exactly tarnish-free. And Baker, who asked Mitchell to do this favor for him, is withholding, for good reasons, part of the story, making it even more difficult for Mitch, the protagonist, to really get to the truth behind the surface story. Mitch is the protagonist. He finds himself still reeling from a year ago. His lover was murdered, and that is covered in my first novel. Everyone, basically, in this story of counterfeit is keeping secrets. Counterfeit is, if you had to label it in a genre, probably psychological suspense, part crime fiction. It's also a morality tale. Even the protagonist, Mitch, has a secret. And he has to just be unrelenting in his pursuit to reveal the skeletons and the secrets all around him to really get to the truth behind the story.
So
that's kind of what counterfeit's about.
So when we look at Mitchell Adams and we kind of look at the relationship that now you have going on between him and the detective Baker, and then you're bringing in, you know, Lonnie and a bunch of other things coming in, when you had character development about this story, how much conflict were you conscious of writing, and how much of it was like kind of unconscious when you were done and you were like, wow, I had no idea that I kind of had all these things banging each other into each other as the book was going on?
Well, when I write, I kind of have a general outline, like a beginning, a middle, and an end. I just love writing. It in some degree, it kind of shapes its own path. I have to corral it in at some point to keep within my basic framework. But my background is, like I said, in psychology. I double majored in psych and English. I went straight through, got my master's in social work. I've got 30 years of experience working in psychiatry, both in private and public settings. Did my practicum at a long since closed mental health center in St. Louis City in a really challenging neighborhood. Pretty much seen every psychiatric pathology known to man. I've seen changes in the field of psychiatry that's grown as well, sometimes backslid.
So you kind of seen it all. You've been able to use your experience within social working and everything else that you kind of have going on to create these characters and create these kinds of depths that they have.
Yeah, I think my experience really lends a lot of realism to the characters. And especially in my first novel, which initially was called The Interrogation Chair, I had to self-publish it in 2010. Uh-huh. It's now I've rewritten it, and Blank Slate is re-releasing that, should be next month in October. In Interrogation, which is the new title, you're first introduced to Mitchell Adams, and he's single. He's never had his heart broken. He's never lost someone close to him. So in some ways, he hasn't really suffered.
Okay.
And, you know, his first love of his life is murdered. He starts getting disguised phone calls from someone who claims to not only be the killer, but also one of his clients. And to make it more of a time crunch, Mitch has been set up. Some evidence has been planted by the killer. He essentially has about a week to find the killer before he himself's arrested. And if he goes to the police, the killer plans to start murdering his clients one by one. Mitch's journey in the first novel takes him all the way back to his fledgling days as a practicum student in a state mental health facility, all the way back to the very first client he ever treated as a graduate student. And then eventually Mitch comes face to face with the killer. And unfortunately for Mitch, he's in an incredibly defenseless position. His hands are tied. His words are his only weapon. And he's faced with a very smart, cunning, ruthless, and delusional killer. And he's got to use all his clinical skills to save his own life and stop this multiple murderer from killing again. So I made it more tense, more suspenseful, and more action-packed from page one. I kind of have a much better idea what I'm doing now after Counterfeit. And I reread The Interrogation Chair, and I found out I didn't like it myself. I said, oh, my God, this is kind of embarrassing. So I think I rewrote it about five times. It's now very fast-paced. I just really like it now.
Now, how did the books kind of get themselves? And again, I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with author Scott Miller, author of Counterfeit. And you can go to scottmillerbooks.com or Scott L. Miller, scottlmillerbooks.com for more information on what you have going on. So when you go from Interrogation into Counterfeit and you have that transition from book one kind of into book two, is it something that that you're telling, you know, should the readers read Interrogation first? Should they go in? Does it make a difference?
Good question. They're kind of standalone books. If you read Counterfeit first, you'll probably, hopefully, enjoy it, but also then kind of wonder, well, gosh, what in the world happened to Mitch and his girlfriend in book one? So I think they're standalone. They're about six or seven characters who are going to be probably in every Mitchell Adams novel. But in my estimation, you know, they do stand alone. I don't think you have to read The Interrogation Chair first, in all honesty.
Okay.
And I'm currently working most of the way done on a third novel with Mitch Adams, and this one is working titled The Virtual Suicide Machine. Hopefully it'll be out in 2015. This one is kind of a novel of redemption. At the end of Counterfeit, the reader gets kind of a hint that Mitch is going to have a new lady in his life. And indeed, he has a new love in book three. Her name's Miranda Gabriel. This is going to be a little bit of a departure because the first two Mitch Adams books were written solely through the eyes of Mitch, the main character. So that can be a challenge because all the info, all the action, Mitch has to either see directly or been told. So in some ways, writing The Virtual Suicide Machine was easier. It's kind of set up the way George R. R. Martin's novels are. Each chapter is the title of a character, and that character is the main driving force of that chapter. It's told basically through that character's eyes.
Is that difficult to write that way? Is it difficult to put yourself and an author into that person's shoes for each chapter?
It can be, and it's funny because, you know, it can be a real challenge writing just solely from first-person narrator. But in this one, toward the end, recently, I kind of slipped back into that, telling it through the first person, and I wrote about 10 or 15 pages, and then I realized, oh my God, I've got I's and me's in here. So I had to go back and okay, this chapter is this character, so I've got to cut that out, and I've just got to go back to writing from each character's point of view. So, you know, I did, interesting you say that, because I slipped and went back to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding it's in many ways easier to write through different characters' eyes. The action in the virtual suicide machine centers around Mitch's best friend, Tony Martin, who's a disgraced psychologist who a few years ago lost his private practice and almost lost his family from having an affair with a client. And Tony's been reduced to doing police ride-alongs in St. Louis City. Basically a PhD psychologist who, you know, has to interact with domestic abuse calls, which are often, as you probably know, very, very dangerous. Tony desperately wants to get his private practice back, and he's always been kind of fascinated with toys and equipment, electronic equipment. So he gets this idea. In the real world, virtual reality has been used by therapists to help speed the recovery of soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan that are really struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder by immersing them into similar stressful situations in a safe environment. They're able to work through their trauma quicker than with normal therapy. So I got this idea. Well, let's take it one step further and have Tony get this idea that he's going to use virtual reality with acutely suicidal clients. And obviously the good in there is to prevent them from killing themselves. So being the equipment kind of guy he is, he works on, you know, this headgear and equipment and a bodysuit, but he's only able to take it so far. So he hires this engineering firm, again, everything's in St. Louis, to help him perfect this machine. So I did a ton of research on virtual reality in general, the human brain, and also the Middle East, because that's going to kind of figure in toward the end. Unfortunately for Tony, he enlists the wrong engineering firm to help him, because this firm, once they realize the power for good and bad that this machine can represent, they have their own designs for it. This book in many ways is much more over the top than my first two. It's got more sex in it. There's a sexy femme fatale engineer who's half Arab and half
that.
British. I know. like I said, a sexy femme fatale engineer, half British, half Arab, who may be acting as a double agent, both against her engineering firm that she works for and certainly not working for Tony's benefit. She's teamed with Tony. She knows all of Tony's past and uses that to her betterment. At last, the machine's built. Tony secretly tries it on himself and also uses it on a former client of his, finds that it works. The machine is stolen, and Tony is drugged and blackmailed with a sex video by my femme fatale in this novel. And then enters Mitch, the hero protagonist and best friend of Tony, who, with the help of his girlfriend Miranda, has to enter the scene and try and track down this ghost femme fatale who's split. Her name is Dani Naila, N-A-I-L-A. Very elusive woman. And in the process of this, both Miranda and Tony's wife, Cindy, are kidnapped to further up the stakes. And Tony I'm sorry, Mitch has to somehow hunt down Danny before essentially World War III starts. The backdrop of this, this all is happening during a papal visit to St. Louis by Pope Francis. So we've got Pope Francis fitting in at the end as well. And there's a very action-packed scene at our basilica in St. Louis that involves Mitch, Tony, Pope Francis, Detective Baker. There's also a blonde TV reporter in all the books, Debbie Franklin, who kind of enters the picture and becomes a pest. And there's cyanide involved, and you're not sure if the Pope has been killed by the poison. Then Danny is caught, but obviously isn't talking. There's a van that's waiting on a side street to take Danny back to the safe house where the hostages are. Mitch enlists the help of the police to secure the three men in the van, but they're not talking. Again, Mitch has to find the weakest of the three terrorists, for lack of a better name, and use his verbal skills to get him to talk. And that's where I am in the virtual suicide machine. My publisher also likes and wants my books to have one-word titles. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out how to make the virtual suicide machine a one-word title yet, unless it's just simply something like redemption. But that's a challenge I face, but we'll see. Uh-huh. We'll see who wins on that one.
You know, and speaking of publisher, because we always have a lot of authors that listen to the show, the one thing that, of course, you were able to do was publish, and then you got picked up by an author. So you got to kind of give us a little bit about that journey, how that kind of happened. How were you able to do that? You know, is there something, advice that you can give to authors that are out there and they want to know?
Don't ever give up. Don't ever keep trying. Keep writing and keep reading every day. Those are kind of real basics. What helped me was just spending $20 a month and joining publishers' marketplace. For that, you can put a world of your stuff online there. I posted what my novel, The Interrogation Chair, was about, what Counterfeit was about. That attracted Christy from Blank Slate Press. We started talking, and I eventually signed a contract with them. Actually, before Counterfeit even was published by Blank Slate, the mere fact that agents, movie houses, other writers, publishers look at that for new talent. Before Counterfeit was even a book, I received a couple very exciting emails from two underlings at New Line Cinema and also a really cool guy that works under Sam Raimi, the big-time director.
Oh, yeah.
Both expressing interest in movie rights for Counterfeit, and the book hadn't even come out. So I just thought that was the coolest thing. And I got so excited, but as often happens, you know, they weren't able to sell it to the higher ups at either place at this time. Another thing that's very helpful, I think, is going to writers' workshops. I went to one in Indianapolis last fall, and in my genre, there were many best-selling writers there. We had Jeremiah Healy, Steve Hamilton, Hank Felipe Ryan, John Gilstrap. I got to meet and rub elbows and drink and eat with them all. I kind of developed a rapport with Mr. Healy, who several of his books I just adore. He was kind enough to kind of pay it forward, take me under his wing for a while, and after I had talked to him about some interest for a movie deal for Counterfeit, he was very kind enough to give me his personal email. And we worked on another draft for a movie synopsis for Counterfeit. Of course, he has a Hollywood agent, and we worked on that. We couldn't agree on it. He had warned me that, you know, for movies, you have to really boil your book down, especially one that's got complex plots and twists and turns and characters. You have to really boil it down to an essence. And
right.
His boiling, I just couldn't handle some of the changes that he was recommending. So we kind of parted ways then. Not too much long after that, real tragedy struck, and I heard that Mr. Healy had died, which is a real loss to the creative world.
Right.
I love writing and reading so much. To me, a good author is a rock star in my world. So it's truly what I want to do. And, I just really just feel so sad that we lost such a talented man in Mr. Healy. So those, I think, are things that are very, very helpful, can be. It only takes one little break to get your foot in the door.
True.
And just never give up. I love the William Faulkner line about a novelist who's a failed short story writer, and a short story writer is a failed poet. Well, that described me perfectly when I first heard it. I started out writing just exceptionally horrible poetry. I was the worst poet in the world. And then I tried a few short stories. I really wasn't serious with them while I started writing the first adaptation of The Interrogation Chair. Didn't really try to shoot out my short stories anywhere, and then worked on basically 20 different versions of my first novel.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, we have killed up this 25 minutes and 30 minutes already on this show, and I'm excited that, you know, everything that you got going on, you have a lot of exciting things happening now, you know, with your writing. It's great to see somebody, that, like you said, you self-published the first one, and all of a sudden, here you go. Now you got your publisher, now you're kind of on your way. So it's a very exciting time for you, and, you know, I wish you nothing but the best in the future. We want to thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, John, thanks for having me. I love it.
All right. Well, hey, like I said, enjoy. Have fun in St. Louis. Hopefully everything dies down a little bit and people start talking about the city in a good light instead of what's going on. Never want to hear that.
There you go. We're going to have a big literary festival in October in St. Louis, and I hope everybody locally comes out for it. Ridley Pearson is going to be there because he's a resident now again here in St. Louis. There's going to be about 50 or 60 of us there. Promoting reading and writing, and there'll be kids events and a fun time for all.
Fabulous. Hey, we want to thank you again so much for coming on. So you have a good one, Scott.
Thanks, John. You too.
All right. Bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is author Scott Miller. Go to scottlmiller.com for more information on all the books he has here. Counterfeit is the one out. Interrogation was the last one, and then he's doing, which probably will change, it sounds like, Virtual Suicide Machine. But again, scottlmillerbooks.com for more information. We want to thank you all for listening here to our Suspense Radio one-on-one half-hour edition Sunday morning. Everybody, keep reading, keep writing, do whatever you got to do, but just keep doing it. And we hope to see you guys all again real soon. And check out suspensemagazine.com for more information on all the radio shows we got going on. And until then, see you again.